Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Melanie, and I'm reading the Big Bend Sentinel. This is Melanie, and I'm reading the Big Bend Sentinel on September 3rd, 2020. Shorthorns football season opener ends in no contest after a Grand Falls player injured. By Abby Perot. Martha. Despite heightened COVID-19 precautions, spirits were high at kickoff for the Martha High School six-man football season, but an injury sustained by a Grand Falls Royalty player during the fourth quarter led to a no-contest ending for the Shorthorns home game against Grand Falls. Players, families, and fans alike were eager for the new season to begin, even with the many changes expected under the Friday night lights this year. The 60 tickets made available for presale sold out before game time, and to avoid the formation of lines and the exchange of physical money, no tickets were available at the box office that night, one of the many changes due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Martha head coach Arturo Alferez said, "I was excited to have a home game here. Then I realized all the logistics that go into it." This year, Alferez said, many coaches are trying to play away games to avoid the hassle of COVID-19 precautions. In preparation, the school added bleachers for visiting fans to be separate from locals, organized the flow of foot traffic with signage, and upgraded bathrooms so that both teams could use separate facilities. Coaches wore masks, socially distanced, and even the middle school managers wore masks and gloves to refill players' waters. "There are so many people that played a big role behind the scenes in making the game possible," Coach Alvarez said. "We did a little bit more than what was expected when it comes to COVID-19 protocol." While Grand Falls was first to put points on the board, Martha pushed back hard. Dedrick Campos scored Martha's first touchdown of the season, and Ethan Sines scored a touchdown on a kickoff return, taking the ball nearly 40 yards to the end zone. Grand Falls scored right before halftime. At the break, the score was 14-12, with Martha trailing slightly. "It was a defensive game," said Alferez in an interview this week. "We did have multiple opportunities to punch it in and score, but there are some things we need to work out here in practice and get ready for our next game." In the fourth quarter, Martha began driving the ball down the field, the score sitting at 20-12, with Grand Falls ahead. Then a Grand Falls Royalty player went in for a tackle against Martha. Helmets crashed together, and the players fell to the ground. After a quick attempt to stand up, the Grand Falls player remained laid out on the field as coaches rushed to assist him. The Grand Falls trainer came down and ran through the concussion protocol. The player remained conscious the entire time, but did complain about back pain and neck pain, according to Alferez. Jesse Pena, an off-duty EMT paramedic who was attending the game to watch his son play, also rendered aid to the player. While Martha EMS had been in attendance during the game, minutes earlier they had left on an emergency call to attend the scene of a single-vehicle fatal car crash south of town. A second EMS team was dispatched to the football game. Since Grand Falls Royalty coach Jeff Corian would be leaving in an ambulance with the injured student, the head coaches agreed to call off the rest of the game, declaring it a no contest. The score was Grand Falls 20, Martha 12 when the game ended. As the only certified bus driver for Grand Falls, Corian expressed concern to Alferez about leaving the rest of his team stranded while he went to the hospital with his injured player, but Alferez stepped up, offering to drive the opposing team home, nearly 2 hours away. "I told him, if you feel comfortable and want to go with him in the ambulance, I can drive your boys to Grand Falls and have one of my coaches follow me and pick me up and bring me back," Alferez said. With their school district's approval, Martha's coach and the rest of the Grand Falls Royalty football team were on their way, with Martha's assistant, Coach Edgar Ramirez, following so he could drive Alferez back to Martha. The injured player was released from the hospital around 2:30 a.m. on Saturday morning. An hour later, at 3:30 a.m., Alferez and Ramirez arrived back home to Martha after dropping off the Grand Falls team. The injured player is well on his way to a quick recovery, Coach Corian wrote on social media. Through it all, our guy stayed brave and calm and handled the situation like a champ. Also, I cannot thank the coaching staff and the school community of Marfa enough. They were helpful through it all. Words cannot express how grateful I am for Coach Alvarez and Coach Ramirez. They drove our players home so I could be at the hospital, wrote Corian. What they did speaks volumes about who they are, not just as coaches, but as human beings as well.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan Snooze for Thursday, September 10th. ACLU warns MWPISD to revise discriminatory dress codes. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The Texas arm of the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, sent a letter last week to Monahan's Wicked Pyote ISD, as well as 400 other school districts across the state, asking them to revise dress code policies that it says are unconstitutional and discriminatory. The letter calls policies such as requiring different hair lengths for male and female students outdated and harmful, and claims such rules could leave districts open to lawsuits. According to Chad Smith, MWPISD Superintendent of Schools, quote, "I haven't received a letter from the ACLU," end quote. A phone call to the ACLU to verify letters had gone out was not returned as of press time. Rebecca Kynes, mother of a Tatum Elementary first grader, said she was told her child was suspended from in-person instruction since she refused to get his shoulder-length haircut. Quote, "I have talked to the superintendent in length regarding this and even provided proof of his Native American lineage, but the superintendent still denied his hair length to be acceptable," end quote. Smith did agree to allow Kynes' child to remain in school while going through the grievance process. Kynes added, quote, "I inquired about the process of getting on the school board agenda to address the policy and was told I needed to send a letter to the superintendent and the board president, Raymond Reyes, within 7 days of the September 21st meeting," end quote. On September 3rd, the day after ACLU's letters were sent out, Kynes said she received an email telling her that the process Smith told her was incorrect, and in order to address district decisions involving normal maintenance and operations, she must go through the grievance process, end quote. Smith went on to say, quote, "Kynes will need to come by the administration building and pick up the Level 1 grievance paperwork. Once she gets to a Level 3, she will then be able to address the school board," end quote. Quote, "I am going to file the grievance as requested by the superintendent. Along with it, I will be submitting a letter on why it doesn't apply to the situation at hand and how we've already attempted resolution at the school and administrative levels and should just go straight to Level 3. Also, I am going to send a letter directly to the school board president and superintendent as originally instructed, explaining the grievance issue above and what our hopeful resolution is," she said. Kynes added she will be contacting the attorney for the ACLU of Texas, Brian Klosterboer, later this week. Quote, "This is not just about my child. It is about all the students who get called out of class every day for their hair or clothes. Who is someone to say a child's clothes does not fit appropriately? Maybe that is all the child has to wear. I am not against rules or policies when the rules and policies are not discriminatory," Kynes said. A petition started on Facebook calling for the district to make changes to the hair and dress codes, to the hair and dress codes received over 650 signatures within 3 days. The action from the ACLU comes 2 weeks after a federal judge blocked a Houston area school from enforcing a dress code policy that states male students, but not female students, must keep their hair ear length or shorter. This same policy sparked national debate when it was used to punish two Texas students earlier this year for wearing their hair in dreadlocks. Quote, while school districts throughout the country have removed policies that were based on antiquated sex stereotypes, many school districts in Texas still have policies that treat students differently on the basis of their gender, Brian Kosterbauer, an attorney for the ACLU of Texas, said in a written statement. Quote, school districts need to conform to federal law and fix outdated policies that cause serious harm to students in Texas, Klosterbauer said. If districts want to restrict hairstyles and hats, the association suggests they be mindful of how their rules, quote, may have a disparate impact on students of a particular race, the letter states. Quote, I have no plans to get my child's hair cut, Kine said. The Monahans News will follow this story and present new updates as they become available. Altaveros arrested after shooting toward his son. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Manuel Ayala Altaveros, age 44, of 503 West 6th Street, was arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail on September 4th on a charge of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. According to Monahans Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana, quote, Corporal Macias, Officer Guzman, Lieutenant Kynes, all responded to a call in reference to shots fired in the 500 block of West 3rd Street. Upon arrival, officers learned Altaveros had been in a physical altercation with his 17-year-old son, Matthew, and his girlfriend, Haley Lara, age 19. It was later discovered Altaveros had discharged a weapon outside toward both his son and Lara. Altaveros was there at the residence and was subsequently arrested and charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon and taken to Ward County Jail. He was released on bond the next day. If convicted, Altaveros could face 2 to 20 years in prison and or fine up to $10,000. The case is still under investigation, and it's not clear if Altaveros will face additional charges. Per Monahans Police Department protocol, Child Protective Services were notified due to Altaveros' son being underage. Monahans man arrested after car chase. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Filiberto Venegas III, age 19, of Monahans, was arrested by Reeves County Sheriff's deputies and booked into the Reeves County Jail on September 8th after he eluded officers for approximately 25 miles. According to Ward County Sheriff Freyran Valle, quote, a Ward County Sheriff's deputy was patrolling 3 miles south of Interstate 20 on Highway 1219 in Piote around 11:30 p.m. when he observed a dark-colored vehicle going at an extremely high rate of speed on Spur 57, end quote. The driver was reaching speeds of over 100 miles per hour in a 75-mile-per-hour zone. Quote, it was then the deputy activated the overhead lights in an attempt to initiate a traffic stop. At that time, it was obvious Venegas was attempting to flee because he accelerated his speed, end quote. Venegas led officers on a chase that lasted around 30 minutes and reached speeds of more than 115 miles per hour and stretched for approximately 25 miles. Venegas continued driving recklessly, ignoring the lights and sirens at a high rate of speed from Spur 57 in Piote, then to Business I-20 through Barstow and into Pecos, Valle said. Quote, we contacted Reeves County Sheriff's Office to get an officer en route to Business Interstate 20, Valle said. The chase came to an end around midnight in the 200 block of West 3rd Street in Pecos after a Reeves County Sheriff's deputy was successful in deploying spike strips. Venegas was charged with evading arrest, detention with a vehicle, a felony 3 in Ward County, and will most likely face similar charges in Reeves County. The reason for Venegas' not stopping when directed to has not been released to the media. Quote, there was always a risk with the chase, and you have to decide whether the infraction outweighs the risk, and in this case it did, simply because we do not know the person or if they may have committed another crime. We do have certain criteria in place to determine whether the chase needs to be discontinued. Everything went as well as could be expected. No one was injured, and the chase ended peacefully. Thankfully, everyone did their part to bring this one to a safe end, Valle said. As of press time, Venegas' bond has not been set, and he remained in custody. COVID-19 cases holding at 4. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. As of Wednesday morning, there were only 4 active cases of the COVID-19 virus, according to Ward County Judge Greg Holly. A total of 832 tests have been administered in the county with a total of 114 cases, 109 recovered, 4 active, and 1 death. There are 6 tests pending. The number of positive cases in the state have dropped below 10%, which is the threshold that Governor Greg Abbott said may allow reopening of bars. No formal decision had been given at press time on Wednesday morning. Ward County Judge Greg Holly said, quote, if we're going to see a significant uptick in active cases, it seems to me this would be the time, following the Labor Day weekend and the recent reopening of schools. The number of active cases in Texas has continued to trend downward for a couple of months now, so we'll see if the recent holiday alters that to any significant degree. If not, that should be good confirmation that things are going very well. End quote. Across the local area, Ector County has reported 4,382 cases with 74 deaths and 3,662 recovered. Midland County has 3,409 cases with 74 deaths and 1,897 recovered. Andrews County has 388 confirmed cases with 290 recovered and 8 deaths. Reeves County has 291 cases with 5 deaths and 268 recovered. Pecos County has reported 330 cases with 259 recovered and 4 deaths. Crane County has 71 confirmed cases, 68 recovered, and 10 deaths. Winkler County has 98 confirmed cases with 84 recovered and 1 death, and Reagan County has 86 cases with 68 recovered and 6 deaths. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Monahans News on September 10th. Eliseo Stephen Mendoza, age 74, passed away on Tuesday, September 8th, in Odessa. Eliseo was born on December 26, 1945, to Natividad and Catalina Mendoza in Presidio, Texas. Eliseo married the love of his life, Lola Anala Mendoza, in Monahans. Eliseo is preceded in death by his parents, Natividad and Catalina Mendoza. He is survived by his loving wife, Lola Mendoza, children, Laura Bejaran and husband Edward, Nicole Walker and husband Daniel Calderon, Chris Mendoza and wife Clecretia, Marisol Mendoza and husband Emilio, Crystal Mendoza and husband Francisco Martinez, Toby Mendoza and husband Michael Celsius, 18 grandchildren, and 24 great-grandchildren. Visitation was held on Thursday, September 10th, at Harkey Funeral Home. Funeral services were held Friday, September 11th, at Grace Fellowship in Monahans with Dr. Mark Bristow. Visit our website, harkeyfunerals.com, to sign the guest book or leave a personal note for the family. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Harkey Funeral Home. Fern Waters Estes, born January 6, 1923, in New Brunswick, Canada, passed away at Heritage Manor Nursing Home in Bloomington, Illinois, on August 29th. An artist, poet, and teacher, she attended Bridgewater State College and Massachusetts School of Art and received a master's degree in English from Sol Ross State University in Alpine, Texas. On June 17, 1946, she married Brooks Simpson Estes. Mrs. Estes taught English in Odessa and Monahans until she retired in 1985. Active in the Ward County Art Association, she was also an enthusiastic gardener and loved to share plants with family and friends. She is survived by her three children, Linda Estes, Stephen Pembroke Estes, and Carol Graham. Her grandsons, Casey Kearns, Chase Carlisle, Josh and Corey Estes, and three great-grandchildren, Lily and Jack Kearns, and Logan Estes.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.